And welcome to Views and Brews and Booze, Haunted History of San Antonio. San Antonio is recognized as for its rich history, culture, colorful stories that have been told, you know, countless times, passed down from one generation to another. And these stories, they include haunted tales, and we're going to be talking about those this evening. I'm David Martin Davies. I'm from Texas Public Radio, and I welcome you to this. I think it's going to be a magical evening. I want to thank you also because if I wasn't going to be here tonight, I would have been watching the Republican debate, and that would have been really scary. This venue, I think, is appropriate to our cause. I do want to call out that, you know, the Women's Club of San Antonio was instrumental in bringing about a women's suffrage to the state of Texas. San Antonio was a hub for activity, and the people here, including Miss Brackenridge, they were at the forefront, at the tip of the spear to bring women's suffrage to Texas, which happened in 1918, 1 year before the U.S. Gave women's suffrage. So that's something to be proud of, and that is, you know, one more thing, why this is an important place for San Antonio. So let's talk about what we're here for, ghosts and goblins and specters and other worldly supernatural items. Raise your hand if you believe in ghosts. Raise your hand. Are you a ghost believer? Okay, that's quite a bit of you. Okay, and raise your hand if you believe in evolution. You know, okay. All right. Okay, I just wanted to get a feel for the crowd. Okay. Who would win, Superman or Batman? I don't know. Okay. Definitely Batman. All right, so let's talk about our panelist. You know, Texas Public Radio, we pride ourselves on being a fact-based organization, and we deal with news and things. But I think even if you're a non-believer in ghosts, which is kind of like myself, there's something to be learned from the telling of the stories. Why these stories? Why did this get passed down? What is there's something important in these stories in and of themselves as literature and also as a window into our why we shudder at certain things and look over our shoulders and fear the dark and what does it say about us and the human condition. And then there's also really scary, and that's fun too. All right, so let's talk about our guest. We have Dr. Kenitra Brooks, and she is an assistant professor of African-American and Afro-Caribbean literature at the University of Texas at San Antonio. Dr. Brooks specializes in black feminist theory, black women's text, horror stories, horror studies, genre fiction, and popular culture. Her most recent publication is The Importance of Neglected Intersections, Race, and Gender in Contemporary Zombie Text and Theories. Also with us, and
thank you.
Next to her is Martin Leal. He's the owner of Alamo City Paranormal. Leal's research and development organization specializes in the psychological and scientific study of ghost phenomena. Leal also leads a nightly ghost hunt in downtown San Antonio. And also, and with me also is Ernesto Malacara. He is the Director of Public Relations and Ghost Expert at the Minger Hotel. Malacara has been in the hotel business for 50 years, working at the Blue Bonnet Hotel, the Gunter Sheraton El Tropicana, and the Minger Hotel since 1977. He's been in the ghost business for about 40 years. So again, I want to thank the Women's Club of San Antonio for this amazing venue, and Ranger Creek Brewing brought us and Distilling brought us some amazing beverages, and Casa Rio on the Riverwalk. There is a hashtag for this evening if you want to Twitter us, and that we welcome that. Hashtag Haunted SA. All right. So let's get started, and Dr. Brooks is going to lead us off with a PowerPoint. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
I just put together something really quick because a lot of the ideas that we speak of when we're talking about hauntings and ghost hunting and all of those things stem directly from the European Gothic tradition. So I just wanted to make sure everyone was sort of on the same page, sort of contextualizing some of these ideas, and also push what the dead and hauntings look like in other cultural traditions, particularly those that are non-Western. So,
okay.
So I titled it, Do You Want to Get Unhaunted? And I participate in this awesome symposium of geeky intellectuals called Astral Blackness that happens once a year in February and March. And the leader, John Jennings, he always asks, do you want to get unhaunted? Do you want to get unhaunted? And I'm always saying, I don't think so. I don't know. I don't know. Do you guys want to get unhaunted? No? Yes? All right. So let's get started. So I want to give a basic and general idea of the Gothic. So it really came about in the latter part of the 18th century. It was sort of a revisioning of medieval sort of cosmologies, architecture. When you talk about like Notre Dame, you're discussing what's referred to as the Gothic revival of architecture. And tangentially, what occurred was the concept of the Gothic in the literary tradition. It focused on a return to the past, accounts of terrifying experiences. So a lot of times it takes place in often in ancient castles, subterranean dungeons, secret passageways, flickering lamps, screams, moans, bloody hands, ghosts, graveyards. If you've seen Crimson Peak, that's a hearkening back to a lot of the classic ideas of the Gothic. So eventually the Gothic came to designate the macabre. And you have the mysterious, the fantastic, the supernatural, the terrifying, and particularly the idea of the pleasurably terrifying, right? The enjoying and sort of sometimes orgasmic enjoyment of the blood, the guts, the gore, and not having a problem with that. All right. So Frankenstein, Mary Shelley, the first edition came out in 1818. Most folks are familiar with the second edition, which I believe came out in 1831. Single most important product of the Gothic tradition. When you think of Gothic literature, it is Shelley's Frankenstein. The creature is an archetypical Gothic creation. It is produced in secret. It is 8 feet tall. It's constructed of separate body parts collected from charnel houses, which is where people would pile or bury the dead. And it's heavily influenced by one of the founders of the Gothic tradition, both in literature and in architecture, Horace Walpole, and the Castle of Otranto. So I want to bring it to some more contemporary ideas of the Gothic. And I just took some quotes from Spooner's Contemporary Gothic, which came out in 2007. It's a short book. It's excellent. So the Gothic The Gothic narratives are concerned with the legacies of the past and its burdens on the present. The radically provisional or divided nature of the self, the construction of peoples or individuals as monstrous or other, the preoccupation with bodies that are modified, grotesque, or diseased. And again, even though this is a contemporary manifestation of the Gothic, you can easily refer to Shelley's Frankenstein. The past chokes the present, prevents progress, and the march towards personal or social enlightenment. And contemporary Gothic is fascinated by spaces of absence, spaces where even within apparently easy to reach of civilization, one could disappear without a trace. A lot of times this will happen in older ancient homes. This will happen in older hotels, as we will find out later. Places that sometimes in the middle of the city or in the suburbs. But you can never be seen again. So, I'd like to talk a little bit about challenging the Gothic, that not all traditions see the dead as terrifying or the past as a complete burden. Some traditions privilege death and its surrounding traditions. I have here a picture of a gentleman at a jazz funeral in New Orleans, my hometown. Many folks don't want to get unhaunted because their dead ain't, and I'm using specifically ain't, their dead ain't haunting them. And I want to talk just for a second about viewing the contemporary Gothic through racialized frameworks. So there's coming this like really new cutting edge literary theory called the ethno-Gothic, where you start to apply racial and cultural frameworks to concepts of horror, concepts of haunting, etc. So ethnogothic is the utility of body horror, supernatural ideology, magical realism, and the uncanny to attempt to deconstruct, explain, and create works of art to understand and investigate the complexities of the Black experience in America. It stems from sort of African-American literary and cultural traditions, but it is being expanded out. I have a graduate student. She's writing on the ethnogothic in African-American, Latino-American, and Irish-American traditions. This is not only from the perspective of current Black citizens, but also through the experiences of our ancestors and forebears who were subjected to levels of trauma that can only be dealt with from the vantage point of awe and its situation within the realm of the unexplainable or the impossible. And a lot of literature is playing with some of these ideas. If you are familiar with Octavia Butler's Kindred, Phyllis Alicia Perry has a book out called Stigmata that's doing awesome, crazy, wonderful things. Gloria Naylor has Mama Day. Nalo Hopkinson, who is a Caribbean writer, is just killing the game. She's at UC Riverside. She's the artist or writer in residence there, and she's just doing amazing work. So, specifically within the African-American tradition and Afro-Caribbean tradition, I like to look at the idea of the African ancestor and where the ancestor is seen as a source of knowledge and experience. The Lukumi tradition out of, which is a West African tradition of ancestor worship, and it's often associated with Santeria. Many West African religious traditions participate in some forms of ancestor worship. There are water candles, pictures, altars on the Boveda. So here it's a little difficult to see, but you will have dolls that will embody one of your ancestors. It will be blessed and it will have an ancestor watching over you. You will have pictures of the dead, those ancestors you want to remember. You will have glasses of water, which you put out for the ancestors. You can put it on your Boveda, which is the table, the main altar table. You can put it on the mini altars that are would be around your house if you're a practitioner. You also put it in places where you simply want to acknowledge the ancestors and have a clean sense of energy. You will also have the white flowers, the white cloth, and many Catholic images, because remember, this is a mixing of Catholic tradition and West African religious traditions. The presence of the ancestors in your home and your life is requested and considered a blessing. This is not a source of terror, though many work through traumas. A lot of times you will hearken back to your ancestors to exercise familial traumas that have happened and come to a place of understanding and healing. And living with the dead is actually considered an honor. Within the Chicano ancestor worship traditions, and specifically I'm going to speak of the Day of the Dead, I use the X because the X is an acknowledgement of the indigeneity of the Chicano tradition and ethnic makeup. You have, again, an altar with pictures, food offerings, sweets, candles, and unique objects. On Dia de los Muertos, you will have this acknowledgement and this worship and appreciation of the dead, of those who came before you. You want them there. So a celebrated remembrance of the dead. The ancestors, again, are seen as a blessing. You pray and worship with and for them. And your ancestors are active participants in your identity construction. So with that, I just wanted to ask again, do you want to get unhaunted? Particularly if you're hanging out with your ancestors, because, you know, I think it's kind of fun sometimes. I'm done.
So, Martin Leal.
Hello. Okay. Okay, my name is Martin, and we have a group here in San Antonio called Alamo City Paranormal. It was started in 1997 as a group of retired professionals. We got a guy that worked with NASA. We have a physicist that works for the Fermi Lab in Chicago. We have a number of doctors and counselors that work with us and stuff. So we deal with people that call us because they think they have a ghost in their house or a business. And we do work with psychics sometimes, but we also try to do this as a pure science type of thing, where we help people deal with the phobia that you're dealing with is our main concern. Not to go out there and prove that they have a ghost. That's not our main concern. But to help the people deal with the phobias. And we have a doctor here in town named Dr. Nathan. He's a psychiatrist, specialized in phobias. Through counseling and heavy medication, he's pretty much able to fix the people's problems with phobias. Now, if you're going to go look for ghosts, what do you think would be the best type of place to start looking? Yeah, that's what everybody says, old places. The truth is we find ghosts anywhere and everywhere. We find ghosts in old buildings, like everybody expects, but we find ghosts in brand new homes too, because a ghost can haunt a person, place, or object. And an object, a person, or new home, you have a ghost. Hey, come on, be honest. Who here has ever gone to an estate sale? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what you're buying, right? Dead people stuff. Through the years, we have also found ghosts under the bed. Sorry. You're all freaked out over there. Okay. In the closet. But number one in most customers is probably cemeteries. And the truth is, they're probably not that great, you know? Now, people say, well, why would a ghost hang out in the cemetery? Well, did you ever see a movie called 21 Grams that came out with Sean Penn years ago? Hmm. The movie was not about ghost hunting or ghosts in particular, but the title of the movie was about a study they did where they think they measured the mass of your soul, leave your body to time of death. And they discovered the average weight was 21 grams. And he also discovered that 2 or 3% of the time that energy would get stuck with the body until 2 or 3 days later. So if you've already been buried, then the energy tries to come out and you have ghosts in the cemetery. So what we do is we also do a tour downtown where we talk about ghosts in different locations. Oh, I'll tell you what. A lot of people ask me, well, what's it like being a ghost hunter now in today's society and stuff? Well, one of the biggest problems we have is with the reality shows. Because you have these people doing these shows, and they have demonologists, and they have this and that. And it makes it tough for us. I mean, we get people calling us where they're dealing with a serious phobia, or they have a child that's dealing with a serious phobia. And they think that they can look up on the internet and find some ghost hunting club that will go and offer them services, you know, and that's going to help them. But you wouldn't let these people operate on your child, okay? They're not qualified. So, you know, that's why we have a doctor that helps people do this. Another problem with our job is we get calls from people that are just kind of a little weird, you know? I had a call a couple of months ago. We had come out on a TV show, a History Channel rerun that I did with Mr. Malacata 15 years ago, something like that. Anyway, there was a rerun, and this guy calls me from Tennessee. He goes, listen, I got a ghost I'm dealing with. Can you help me out? I said, sure, of course. I said, first of all, where do you see the ghost? He goes, I see the ghost in the day room. And I'm thinking right off the bat, penitentiary or mental institution, right? So I said, well, could you fill me in here? Just exactly where this day room is? He goes, oh, well, yeah. I'm in a mental institution, but I shouldn't be here. I said, yes, sir, I understand. I understand. People are misdiagnosed on a daily basis, sir. Okay, well, I said, what do you see? He says, well, I see the ghost of a young girl, a little girl. I said, okay, cool. He goes, guess what? I give up. I'm the only one that can see her. I said, yes, sir, I know. Some people are special. You know, some people are gifted. Okay, so he told me, look, I'm going to make a webpage. You can follow my webpage if you want, all about the goal. I said, that's okay, sir, that's okay. Just keep taking your little pills that they give you and you know, have a good night's sleep. Now, we did work with the Alamo. We do this ghost tour, and we're the only ghost tour in the state of Texas that is exempt from sales tax because we're based on actual fact and not fiction. Not a single other tour in the state could pass that rule. So we take people, and it's more a way for us to try to educate the public on actual parapsychology instead of what people see on some of these shows and stuff. If you ask me, if you want to go look for ghosts, you know, the best place is probably Alamo. Now, one of the biggest misconceptions that people have is that you got to go someplace dark. It's better if it's 3 in the morning, blah, 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 you know. Well, we worked with the actual Alamo before the state took it over with the Daughters of the Republic for 5 years, actually getting the employees to document sightings and stuff. And we were able to find about 4 ghosts that appeared where we would get at least 3 reported sightings a month or more. One of them, a ghost of what we call named Antonio, we actually discovered a ghost. One of the officers that worked there at night started seeing him at nighttime. The chief of police asked me, hey, how many people on your tour have seen this ghost that Rudy's been checking about? I said, well, basically 0, because you have the lights turned off in that window there, you know, but it's to the long barracks patio, if you're familiar with what I'm talking about. There's a patio, there's some window there, and it doesn't have any glass panels in it, but it has some weird beams and a wood frame. And 65 feet in, there's a door, and he would see a ghost coming out of that door at night. And I told Vince Phillips, the chief of police, I said, well, you have the lights turned off. Rudy sees a ghost because he has a flashlight in his hand, you know, that's why he sees them. So the next day, Vince calls me up in the morning, you know, wakes me up early in the morning. I mean, it was like the crack of noon, something like that. I like to sleep late, okay? I'm up late at night. So anyway, I said, what do you want? He said, listen, I changed your procedure manual. From now on, we leave the lights on the long bears for the safety of my officers. I said, oh, safety, huh? He said, oh, shut up and look for the ghost, will you? Well, we started getting this guy with thermal imaging once or twice a week right off the bat. The guy's pretty active. And we started doing research about him, and we discovered his name was Antonio. A psychic led us to this. Now, when a psychic tells us something, we don't say, oh, yeah, that's the end of the story, the psychic said so. We want to back it up with history or science. So we were able to discover that there was a guy that died during the Battle of the Alamo named Antonio Fuentes. His name is listed on the side of the cenotaph. And that basically, you know, I've always grown, when I say grew up here in Texas, they told me, yeah, all these Alamo defenders, they died here. They volunteered for the freedom of Texas. That's not true. Antonio Fuentes was not a volunteer. He was a thief. He was arrested for stealing and thrown in one of the jail cells in the granary section of the Long Barracks about a week before the Mexican Army showed up. Then when the Mexican Army showed up, nobody asked him, hey, you want to stick around for the battle? No, he's still serving his jail time. On the 13th day, the Mexican Army jumped the wall and started killing people. Well, it was documented by the defenders that they released a prisoner to help in the battle, which probably did him more bad than good, because maybe if he was in a cell, they would have let him go. But they killed him in the Long Barracks. We also found out he had no wife, no children, stuff like that. So it made sense that he would get stuck at the Alamo. So we actually got over 300 thermal images of him. And it's, you know, if a ghost is there and you have the right kind of equipment, there's no reason why you should not get images on a regular basis. You know, a lot of places I've gone to around the world where they say, yeah, this place is very haunted, but when it comes down to it, they talk about 1 or 2 people seeing the ghost, you know, in the last 100 years, you know. So if there's a place that's haunted, you should get activity on a regular basis. Another place that we discovered that was very active here was La Soya Court. Anybody know where that is? You know where the Hyatt Hotel is that overlooks the Alamo? Right across the street, there's a little courtyard behind the auditorium. Huh? Well, it's not down below. It's right next to that. But the auditorium is up above. Then you have that down part, and then you have the other side. Okay, but anyway, so if you walk by there, you'll see there's a statue of Jose Toribio Lasoya. And on the other side of that, where they dug down, there's the courtyard. Well, we've been picking him up for about 4 years. And we got some pretty interesting pictures. If you want to, later I'll show you some pictures that we got just the last couple of weeks that'll, you know, kind of freak you out. How much more time do I have?
Well, let's see here. Yeah, let me get Ernesto a chance to talk, and then we'll get some more from you. We're here with
okay. Well, thanks for listening to me.
Good evening, and thank you so much for coming, Ernesto Malacara. First of all, let me ask one question. Do we have any ladies or gentlemen that have red hair? Believe it or not, but people with red hair are the favorite targets of our fine little friends that refuse to check out of the hotel after 156 years. That's how long.
Natural red hair?
Yes, ma'am. The hotel is 156 years old, having been opened on February the 1st of 1859. And I've seen this happen so many times. They especially like younger girls who are wearing their hair in a pigtail or a ponytail. I was having a conversation with a girl right outside of the main ballroom, and she was telling me about her haunted home in Fort Worth, and she obviously knew what she was talking about. Her hair was hanging straight down, and while we were talking, all of a sudden, her hair just shot up like this. Now, she did not get upset about it. She just said very, very calmly, she says, "If you don't mind, I'm trying to have a conversation with this gentleman." And the hair just dropped beautifully down. We have in the hotel, we have all kinds of apparitions that occur. As a matter of fact, my wife Marianne and I live in a house, and I'm beginning to wonder, because we've had several issues. One is the aroma of a very expensive pipe tobacco that only comes around when it rains. And the other is my set of keys to the house, which I missed for 4 days. And she told me, she says, "Well, check." I said, "I've checked every place. And I went back with the lights off. I just had eye surgery. I said, my vision is not what it's supposed to be. But I'll get Superman's eyes pretty shortly. Mm-hmm. And there on top of my dresser were my three house keys. And they were not there. I just saw something glimmer, so I reached down, and sure enough, that's where they were. So we have the same problem at home. It makes you wonder. What I've done is I've prepared a list of stories, some of those stories that we have, which actually in apparitions and things connected with it, we have had 43 different apparitions and different things connected with it. Believe me, ladies and gentlemen, they are ghosts. They really, really are. I mean, it's just there, and some people attract better than others. One of our oldest granddaughter is very, very good. We had an incident at making contact with these people, especially when she was younger. I had an incident. I lived in a hotel many years back, and when you live in a hotel, you learn two things. You learn to open the one eye open. You learn to sleep with the one eye open, and you always keep your bed, your clothes, and your shoes right by your bed because you're going to get up. And certainly enough, I got a call at about 5 o'clock in the morning to go to a certain room, which was on the fifth floor and is still there. I identified myself to the lady. She opened the door, and I could see what the problem was immediately because there was a body of a man laying on the floor. She let me in the room, and she explained what happened. She said that they had both arisen that morning, and the question was asked between them, who is going to shower first? So she said, "Well, honey, you know that you do your calisthenics, and I like to do my shower very early, so by the time I get out of my shower, you should be through with your calisthenics, and then you can take a shower also." Okay. Now, what happens is we made arrangements to take her to Baptist Hospital. She talked to the priest there at the Baptist, et cetera, the minister, and made all arrangements to get her husband's body back to their state, city. And to this day, not every day, but on certain days, we have maids who do not like to make up that room because they say when they get to the bathroom, which is the last thing that they make up, and they finish making up the bathroom up and they start to close the door, the shower comes on automatically. Not all the time, but on certain days. I've had it checked by plumbers and would-be plumbers and master plumbers, and nobody can figure out what happens, but it really does happen. These are strange little things that happen like that that nobody can account for. I'm not talking about hatchets flying through the air and heads falling off and things of that nature. While living in the hotel, I also had an experience with I got a call, and this was at about 3 o'clock in the morning. The young man back at the desk said, "Can you please come down?" I said, "Why are you being held up? What's wrong?" He said, "No, I got a problem. I got with this displeased guest." Okay, so I went down, and there's this short, heavy-set man standing there in his shorts and his T-shirt, barefoot. And he said, "Are you the manager?" I said, "Yes, sir. How may I assist you?" And he says, "Well, I got a problem. I want to change my room because," he says, "there's a man standing out, and he just keeps looking at me through the window. He just will not go away. He keeps looking at me." Oh, I said, "I'm very sorry to do that." So I told the young man back that I said, let's upgrade the gentleman and get him a nice junior suite or a suite. And I went up and I helped him move, pack his things, and move him to the other room. On my way back down by the desk, going back to my room, the young man asked me, "Why did you give that guy a suite?" I said, "Because, well, number one, he's a guest and he's very, very, very important. Number two," he says, "his room is on the fourth floor. There is no balcony outside that room, and I cannot see somebody hanging on the window ledge like this four stories up all night long." I have one particular ghost, if you will, that I call Frisky. And the reason that I call him Frisky is because of the fact that he cannot keep his hands off the ladies. I've had several issues that have happened there. I have this lovely couple. She is a federal officer in a government park, and I forget what her husband does, but they were staying in the hotel, and they've been coming back year after year trying to get the same experience repeated. And what happens is she said that they went to bed, and everything was fine for a few moments, and all of a sudden she felt a hand press over her mouth, and then another hand pressing on her chest area between her breast and pushing her down into the bed. She tried to wake her husband by calling him. Some people react rather strangely to this because they lose the ability to speak. And she finally had to take her fist and double it up and hit him in the ribs to wake him up. He got out of bed. He put on the lights. And when she finally calmed herself enough to speak, they saw the imprint of two knees on the bed right next to her body. Years back, I had a lady come up to the desk one morning, and she said, "Are you Ernesto Malacara?" And I said, "Yes, ma'am, I am." She was a very attractive lady. And she said, "Well, we have got to talk." And I said, "Lord, thank you, you know." Didn't work out that way at all. She said that she was taking her bath that night, and all of a sudden she got this feeling, and it just absolutely chilled her, that there was an older man in the room, and he was looking at her, and he was very dissatisfied because she was in the room. So she finished up her shower as quickly as she could, put on her PJs, and went back out. Now, a lot of people, some people sleep on their back, some people sleep on their left side, some people sleep on the right side. I sleep on the right side, and so did she said. But if she slept on the right side, she would be facing the wall with a door over there. So she had to sleep on her left side facing the door all night long. She said that everything was fine, and all of a sudden she just got this tremendous chill, and her hair just stood straight up like that. And then she felt these two bony hands over her ear. And whoever it was uttering something in some strange language she did not quite understand into her ear. She was finally able to control herself, and she said, "Go away, leave me alone." And you would be surprised how quick those words make these ghosts react. He went away. She got on, put on the lights, and it was the same scenario. The two knees right by her body on the bed, the imprints of them. I had a couple check in, and it was a big IBM convention, a real big one, and they got there very, very late, and they were assigned the King Suite. The King Suite is the King Ranch Suite is a very special room that we have in the hotel that was lived in by Captain Richard King, the founder of the King Ranch, way back when. The minute that they walked through the door, the lady told her husband, she said, "I don't like this room, honey." He says, "Look, we've been traveling all day. I've got a very heavy presentation to make in the morning." And he said, "Let's just go ahead and spend the night here tonight. And tomorrow we'll get up, and after the convention, we'll get them to change our room for us. So they said, finally got ready for bed, put out the lights, hopped into bed. And she said that everything was very, very fine. And all of a sudden, she looks up and she sees these two faces of skeletons that are floating about the room and are grinning at her. So she wakes him up and she says, honey, there's these two skeletons. They're floating about the room and they're smiling at me. I'm afraid. And he said, look, man, I told you, I'm tired. You know, I got a big presentation to make. I don't know nothing about no skeleton faces. Leave me alone. I got to sleep. So then she went back and pulled the bed sheet. And I interviewed this woman for about an hour and a half the next day. Pulled the bed sheet completely up to her neck. And she said that there was quiet for a few seconds. And then all of a sudden she felt a very bony hand grab the cover and start to slowly pull it down. Well, this old gal must have been from New York or something because she was tough. She jumped out of bed, put on the light, told her old man, she said, look, by God, unless you go down and get me a room right now, I'm going to go down. I got my own credit card, and I'm going to go just like I'm dressed right now, and I'm going to get a room. So, of course, we moved them over at about 4 o'clock that morning.
So I think you ought to rename that ghost. Frisky seems too amiable. He needs to be like the assaulter or something.
That'll scare people, that will.
But let me ask Dr. Brooks. What is you're hearing these stories? Tell me what you're hearing.
What do you mean? Tell you about what?
Well, I mean you're hearing stories, ghost stories, mm-hmm. and you seem to understand a lot, and
yes.
you have a very a good understanding about relationships between our world and the other world, and so when you hear these types of stories, I mean, is what makes up the Frisky? You know, what's up with that?
Well, not only do I study this in literature, but I'm also from New Orleans, which has recently been named the most haunted city in the United States. So I've grown up with these sorts of stories all of my life. They're nothing out of the ordinary. There has always been crossover between the multiple worlds. And, you know, I think because we're from Western traditions where things are binaries, either or, and a lot of times we're learning more and more how things are spectrums and how nothing ever stays in its place and things are always moving and oscillating and crossing over and crossing back and things like that. Aside from those spirits and things that stay in this world and choose to be here in this world, whether it is in the ancestral tradition, watching over their descendants, participating in their lives, guiding them, giving them advice, these sorts of things. So death is only a transition. It's not an ending. It is simply another state of being. So there is the potentiality for these things to exist, and they certainly do within my purview.
So, Mr. Liao, tell me, you don't have sales tax because you're the only ghost hunting operation in Texas that's based on fact, and that's...
No, we're the only ghost tour in San Antonio, and as far as we know, the only ghost tour in the state of Texas... That was given an exemption from collecting sales tax.
And that is because you're a religious organization? Or I mean, how does that work? I mean, if you're a nonprofit or religious, then you don't pay sales tax.
No, they
don't have anything to do with fact.
You go before a board with the state controller's office.
Uh-huh.
And it's based on educational fact.
Okay.
The truth is, you know, a lot of ghost stories, and well, most of them are just, you know, basically they make up stories, and then they make up history to back up the ghost story. Like one of the biggest stories here in town from some of the other tourists was that there's this haunting tree in town. And basically the truth is they haven't hung anybody from a tree in San Antonio for over maybe 200 years or something. Okay, and but what they do is they make up this story about this haunted tree because all the people were hung from that tree. Because then what they do is they tell you, scientifically we can prove this is haunted because they'll shoot a temperature gun up above the tree. Now, what you're hitting is you're hitting the atmosphere. And you know when you get up in the air, it gets colder. So what they do is they take a reading above the tree and say, well, see, you get this cold spot because of all the ghosts in the tree. I'm not saying they scientifically try to support it, but it's all made up.
So
as far as, you know, that's all I can say is we have an exemption from the state controller's office because we're based on fact and not fiction.
All right. And so, Ernesto, you have all these ghosts. I mean, that sounds, is there any room for actual guests to come into the hotel because there's all the ghosts you have there?
In my years with the hotel, I have only had one person who told me, if I get a ghost while I'm here, I'm going to sue the hell out of you. But it turned out that was a very good friend of mine. These things do exist. We have two tiny tots that are about 5 years old. He is dressed in a double-breasted navy blue jacket with white short pants and boots, and the little girl is dressed in a very pretty little dress. And what they do with the maid help and the hall boy help, etc., when they see them in the hallways, they run toward them, and they stop about right here, and then they simply disappear. I've had too many of the maids and the guys upstairs tell me that not to believe them. I mean, that many people cannot be lying. And another thing that I say is I know that they're not reported as often as they happen because the first thing the person will say is, I want to tell you what happened last night, but you got to understand, I wasn't smoking nothing funny and I wasn't drinking last night. So I think that they're embarrassed to really talk about what's really happening to them. It's there. It's really, really there. We don't make it up, you know. And I know that a lot of times things are made up. I know that. And a lot of times things happen out of, like one time we had a new hall boy come down and say, tell me, he says, Mr. Malakata, there's a ghost upstairs and it's pushing the dolly. I said, what floor is it on, son? And he said, it's on 4. I said, well, you find out Berlin, who was about 4'3", the maid was actually shorter than the maid's dolly. And so she,
so we're going to open up for questions. You can queue up at the microphone right there because I really want to hear what y'all have to say about this because I don't know what to think. It's pretty amazing. But Dr. Brooks, I'm really impressed with what you're saying, particularly about the Gothic tradition, and you talk about people using ghosts and ethnic and the Gothic tradition to talk about dealing with traumatic events, mm-hmm. and how particularly, you know, if there are things that we sometimes just can't process, mm-hmm. even in reality, mm-hmm. there are terrible things that happen in history. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, is it possible that some of these stories are a way for people to deal with the psychological issues of some of the traumatic events, even stories that they may not have actually experienced, but maybe their family has?
Well, you know, that's why we look at horror. Movies, read horror books. That's why there is a pleasure that comes from being scared. It's a unique trait of humanity. And different cultures have different manifestations of that pleasure. What scares you is very, very culturally based because it's based on what you would consider monstrous or a monstrosity. So that ghosts can be helpful and ghost stories themselves can be helpful even if you are not interacting with the dead, but the whole process of someone else's experience with it can help you process and or enjoy or reach a certain peace through within your own experiences.
All right, so you want to step up to the microphone. We'd love to hear from you.
I just had a question. Okay. You were saying that death is not final. It's not the end. It's a transition. Mm-hmm. So why are some ghosts visible? Why do you see some, and there are millions of dead people on the planet, mm-hmm. why is not everyone, you know what I mean? I mean, if they transitioned and you can see them at the Minger, you can see them at certain places, why can't you see all of them? Or does the ghost choose to be visible? How does that work?
Well, from my studies, some ghosts choose to move on and some stay around. Some have a vested interest of staying within this realm, perhaps being visible. I've never literally seen a ghost. I felt presences. And I also think that some people have the ability or the attraction more to see ghosts or feel ghosts. I'm sure that happens, particularly within ancestral traditions, but it can also be that person is there and where you become open enough to it that you can see that person, communicate with that person or what have you. Because if you don't believe, if that's not what you choose to interact with, then, you know, why would that ghost want to deal with you within ancestral tradition?
So yes. Martin Liao, what do you think about why do some people who...
Scientifically?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. What do you think a ghost is? I think the most accepted theory is you have your ethereal energy, your aura, your soul, your consciousness. That's the energy that gets stuck on Earth without a being, physical being. That's what a ghost is. You know, there's a... that's the reason why psychics talk about how they can see auras and ghosts. So your aura energy is what we believe is maybe the most accepted scientific reason on what a ghost is. So our company became internationally recognized for two things. Like in 2008, Univision did a TV special that aired in 30 countries, and we were picked as one of the 5 top paranormal research groups in the world because we invented some specialized vapor thermal cameras. And we invented some glasses that help people see the human aura. We think that the ghost energy is most visible between 380 and 440 nanometers of the color spectrum, which is down at the very edge of the ultraviolet sector of the color spectrum. Some people can see this better than others. Some people have better night vision than others. I mean, how many people in here have glasses or contacts or something or have had some kind of work on their eyes? Probably 60-70%, because, you know, some people have better eyesight than others. So that's why we think psychics can see ghosts and auras. So that's a sign. Now, why are some visible and some not? Who saw the movie Ghost with Patrick Swayze?
Mm-hmm.
Remember, he's trying to warn his wife about the bad guys, and he didn't do so well at first, but after
that's fiction. That's Hollywood invented that film. It's to sell tickets.
But the facts behind it, the scientific science behind it is correct. Okay, like Beetlejuice was a comedy, but it was more correct than some of these movies that are supposed to be on the real thing. But the thing is, so a lot of times it may take a while for the ghosts to become visible. They have to learn how to create photons, which is scientifically based. That's what makes things visible to your eyes. And they have to learn a source of energy. So you've heard how the ghosts make cold spots. They're drawing energy from the atmosphere. It's based on quantum physics.
Okay.
So they have to learn a source of energy, and then they have to
learn. Absent today, they taught that at school.
That's just one scientific viewpoint. So you have to understand this is all just like fish. Nobody's interviewed a fish, but through observation, we understand why fish spawn and where they're going to move and things like that.
Okay.
So it's parapsychology, not science.
All right, next question.
Relating to the movie aspect that you mentioned, we have a lot of pop cultural imagery of ghosts, the paranormal, from Steven Spielberg, Stephen King, all the way back to Edgar Allan Poe and E.T.A. Hoffman. Is there any of that that you would consider more authentic than others? Any show or movie or book that really captures the ghost hunting experience or what we experience when looking for them?
That's for me?
Yes.
Well, that's for Dr. Brooks as well.
And Dr. Brooks.
She's so well-versed. Yeah.
Okay, for me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, you're asking about movies and how they affect ghost hunting?
No, what's the most accurate depiction of ghost hunting?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, paranormal.
Well, it's surprising. You know, a lot of these movies that are comedies and stuff are more accurate in ghost theory. Like, who saw The Others? Mm-hmm. Remember when Nicole Kidman found out at the end that she was the ghost?
Mm-hmm.
And they were freaking out because they saw the humans. Well, I'll tell you what, in our research, we get regular sightings between 50 and 85 feet away. We're close enough to see them, but not close enough to scare them off. That's all I can tell you is, you know, we're getting regular sightings. When we started doing these ghost hunts 18 years ago, we were getting 4 sightings a year, and now we're getting one or maybe twice a week because we've gotten about 3 or 4 different ghosts that appear on a regular basis. That we've learned what makes what kind of catalyst brings them out. So as far as the TV shows, the ones that claim to be based on a true story, A lot of them are the biggest fake ones. But even, you know, like, I wouldn't say I could pick one movie that was the most accurate. But there a lot of them, you know, like Beetlejuice, it's fact the fact that you have ghosts haunting a place because they liked it. You know, I mean, look at the hotels that are haunted on these TV shows, like the Menger. It's a beautiful hotel. You know, we call that the experience of a lifetime phenomenon, a place that people went to when they're alive. And when they die, let's go back to the place where they had the experience of a lifetime. So, our company has yet to find even one haunted Motel 6 out there. you also have Ghost Stick Around.
The one with the ghost of 10,000 roaches.
They get those MasterCard points.
Perhaps. So, Dr. Brooks, what would you consider like a film or something or work of literature that is a good illustration maybe of a healthy relationship with the paranormal?
Like I have to pick one movie?
No, Dr. Brooks.
I recommended some earlier texts works of literature that really deal with these ideas. So, again, the ideas of the past and haunting. Phyllis Alicia Perry's Stigmata is where her ancestor, her great-great-great-grandmother, who was taken as a slave, wants her story to be told. And you run into the problem where, she was not a learned woman. She couldn't read or write. So how do these women begin to tell and transmit their story? She possesses her descendants. And so possession becomes a way of storytelling and a different sort of ontology or way of being, as well as a valid epistemology. So that these older spirits can let you know what their experiences were in the past. So every other generation of the oldest girl, she possesses them.
Ernesto, how different is the Menger from The Shining?
Well, when you walk down the wooden halls and it squeaks, you damn sure think you're in The Shining. You really do, I'll tell you. Because our halls are just like those halls, are extremely long. Just extremely long and squeaky.
Do they have red rum in the lobby bar? All right, next question, please.
Hi. This question is for Dr. Brooks. Earlier this year, I went to Haiti, and when I was there, judging by the people I talked to anyways, voodoo was very much alive and well. I've heard a lot of different stories about the origin of even the word zombie and how it became part of our vernacular. And although we sort of have the Romero zombies that we're a big fan of now in World War Z and Walking Dead, etc., the earlier ideas of it seem to come from the times of slavery in Haiti before the revolution. I know this is a little bit off the subject of ghosts, but I couldn't help but notice this was a huge focus of yours, and I would really like to hear, you know, what your opinion is, what the true story, at least as close as we can get to the actual facts of the origins of zombies are, since that's the Haitian origin is what I've heard, but I just would like to know from the person who knows.
I can't think of this author right now, but she wrote an article on how zombie, Z-O-M-B-I, which is the Haitian tradition of zombieism, became zombies, Z-O-M-B-I-E-S, right? So sort of became westernized in this tradition. There's an early movie, I believe it's from 1934, called I Walked with a Zombie. And you start to sort of get this beginning transition in film, because zombies have been more popular on film. Now we're getting a lot of zombie literature out there and comic books. But, you know, for a long time, they were central to filmic experiences. And where you start to get this transition of the Haitian zombie into this sort of fearful representation of zombies that we are now familiar with. You also have, with the idea of zombies, a lot of racial conversations, cultural conversations going on. So Annalee Newitt, she has a book called Pretend We're Dead. And in one of the chapters, she talks about Romero's idea of the zombie, and she talks about the zombie, in a sense, representing the sins of the past raising from the dead, and in a sense, overwhelming and coming back to visit and infect these ideas. So the Gothic idea of the past coming back to haunt the present and preventing the present from moving forward, from healing, because the present fails to deal with those past traumas. So there's a lot of sort of cultural ideas, ethnic ideas in the whole zombie realm and zombie genre.
But is there sort of a factual early source, a truth that the zombie legend grew out of? Is there a religious belief or a common practice that led people to think they were actually seeing zombies?
Oh, so you're talking about the zombie associated with Vodou?
Yeah.
So anthropologists have viewed that. Zora Neale Hurston talks a little bit about some of it. In her book, where she goes and she visits and she goes through some of the ceremonies and those sorts of things. So, it was also the subject of a very, again, very Americanized version, The Serpent and a Rainbow, of, you know, medicinal properties, of a sort of a drugging or something that would occur using the medicines, and that the Hugons, who are the priests, the male priests, and Mambos are the female priests, that they would actually have this tradition of the zombie, Z-O-M-B-I. And there would be different manifestations of it. Sometimes it had evil intent. Sometimes it had healing intent. Simply as it was chosen, as it was sort of manifested by what the priest or priestess believed should have happened.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, right. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Next question.
Awesome. I'm hearing y'all, and I know I've heard a lot of ghost stories tonight, so I'm very curious also about some of the Texas, South Texas folklore that we hear about as kids. The La Llorona, the La Chusa, I don't know.
Cucuy.
Donkey Lady, Cucuy. Maybe Dr. Brooks and maybe the paranormal researchers can kind of elaborate on maybe, have y'all investigated any of these? Are they real? Are they made up? What's your take on these South Texas folklore?
Well, we'll just take one at a time. I get the tracks, right?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch.
Huh?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of folklore.
Yeah, we could go on for 2 hours,
right,
2 days.
Right,
okay,
right.
No. Okay, the tracks. Dosha Williams, my adopted mother and his aunt, is the number one author of ghost books in the state of Texas, you know, and it was discovered that in 1938 a school bus was hit by a train in Salt Lake City, Utah. And it was on the front page of the local newspaper for 3 days. The illiteracy rate back in 1938 was probably 40%. So don't you think that could lead to a misrepresentation of what happened here on the south side of San Antonio? Now, she could never find any evidence of any buses being used, any school buses. And there were 28 children killed in that bus accident in Salt Lake City, Utah. Okay, but she could never find any evidence of a school bus accident, or even school buses being used before 1960. Okay, now, Donkey Lady, come on, if you believe that, you know. I got a doctor I can send you to. Okay. Let's see, La Llorona and La Chusa. Yeah, you know what the La Chusa is, right? Okay, I understand if you go to a botanica and you hire the curandero there, like if you got a neighbor that throws trash in your yard, they'll fix them for you. Is that true or something? And they take on they take on the shape of a big white owl. Have you heard this? Is this real or I'm off or something?
Well,
this is what I've heard.
The owl is bad.
La Chusa? Yeah.
Well, the idea is that
yeah.
You are or there's somebody that doesn't like you.
Right.
And they go to a brujo, which is an evil witch practitioner, and they put a hex on you, and the messenger is the lechuza.
The lechuza. Exactly.
You know, and there's different depictions of a lechuza. It could be a white owl. It could be a buzzard or a crow, like with a witch face. And basically, when whatever hex that has been put on the family or that person has come through, then you know the messenger leaves.
Right.
And a lot of times, it's a harbinger of death as well. So.
Yeah, so in one book, there's 13 different stories about what a lechuza is, and there's about 15 different stories about the La Llorona. But I have a police officer from Elmendorf, Texas, telling a story about how he actually had to respond to a call where the lady said there was a lechuza in our tree. And when he showed up, he said that the lady would not come out. She would just like open the door and yell, "There's a lechuza, get him, you know, shoot him. And so he called the dispatcher and said, "Okay, I took the call." He says, "I don't see any lechuza," but I did try to talk to a witness. He says, "Right next to the lady's house, there was a small creek. And I tried to talk to a woman that was standing there, but every time I asked her a question, all she said was, 'Help me find my children. Help me find my children.'" So he said the dispatcher had to take a 30-minute break because she could not talk for 30 minutes. She was laughing so hard.
But I've heard that every culture has a version of La Llorona because it's basically a story that parents tell little children to stay away from the water.
Stay away from the river, exactly.
Because that's where they could drown.
Right, just like in Hawaii, they got La Pele.
Right, stay away from the well, stay away from the river, the creek. Okay, yes, sir.
So I think this question is for Dr. Brooks and Mr. Liu. But
me
for both of you. Oh, I think it's for both of you.
Okay.
But so we're talking about as far as like ancestral ghosts coming and, you know, either being supportive of their ancestors or, you know, helping them in some sort of way, or, you know, and us looking towards them for help. But then we see other forms of ghosts where, like in the hotel, you know, they're pushing up against them, and then you hear other stories where people are, you know, freaked out by them, and they do, quote unquote, harmful things to those people. So I guess, is there any understanding of why a ghost might do something that is not helpful to the person? It seems like there's like the ancestral version of a ghost that is helpful and the other ones that are kind of the creepy version of that.
I want to be clear. Not all ancestors are helpful and not all ancestors. I mean, because in a sense, you know.
It's like Thanksgiving dinner.
I know. Well, I mean, everyone's got those people in their family.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's uncle or aunt so-and-so. You're like, they'll give you advice, but you're not really going to take it. There is the manifestation where you'll have a troubled ancestor that is, in a sense, traumatized, that even has evil intent towards you. And again, how I say that sometimes working with ancestors can help you work through traumas. Sometimes it is their trauma upon you or their own traumas that are causing them to be a negative energy in your life. And this is usually where people go to curanderas. This is usually where people will go to their priest in whatever tradition they are working with. So there are instances where ancestors, you know, can and will do you harm, where they are, you know, not out for your best interests. A lot of times it's not always with malice. It's just because they themselves are a lost soul and they're just sort of bad energy again comes upon and affects you in your life.
So it's like somebody has bad luck. They have a bad ancestor and it just falls on them, sort of.
And usually, like, people who have trauma, people who were murdered, people who were sexually assaulted, people who, in a sense, struggle with addiction. I knew of a young gentleman. He had an ancestor who he had to watch out for because she loved the good life, right? And so she would get like seduced by like, you know, flashy stuff and whatever. And, you know, he was told just to sort of watch out because you have that weakness that she shared with you, right? So when you meet like, you know, the partner, the potential partner with the money and all these things, just check yourself. It's something you need to be in charge of and know about. So of course those things do happen. It's not all good. And, you know, again, a lot of times these are working out past ideas. The book that I told you about Stigmata, the ancestor that possesses them, they experience stigmata, wounds because of the slave shackles. So she starts bleeding from her, she's bleeding from her wrists, she's bleeding from her her ankles, she experiences the lashing that she received from her mistress. So the descendant that we are dealing with, she spends like 13, 14 years in a mental hospital because people think that she's cutting herself, right? So again, this is working out past trauma, but it doesn't always manifest very well in that person's life.
All right, next question. And we're going to cut off the questions at the end of the line.
Okay. Hi. Dr. Brooks, if I understood what you were saying earlier, it's like there's another world or dimension where the ghosts are crossing over into our world. Are there people in our world that can cross into the ghost world? And if so, have any of them ever made that known?
I'm not familiar with that tradition. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. It's just not where I specialize or I, you know, examine. My apologies.
Okay.
I just had a question, just as I'm sure everybody's seen the 13th ghost. My curiosity is, do ghosts actually come out and harm other people, as far as just in general, people that in, you know, alive and people from the past come back and haunt them and, you know, hurt them physically or any type of thing like that? Because I'm, you've seen multiple things. I know that was a movie and all, but yeah. I mean, I've heard.
Let me ask Ernest to give him that question, since he seems to have the most close encounters. has anyone actually been injured or hurt?
No. In my years there at the Mingra, I believe that they're called
poltergeists.
Pardon? The ghosts, the ones that damage rooms, the things of that nature.
Poltergeists?
No, poltergeists, I believe is what they're called, and I've never seen that. Never.
Never harm another person or anything of that sort.
I have not seen that, and I think if it did exist, that it would more likely would have happened.
Okay. Thank you. All right, and our last question.
I'm from here, so I'm familiar with the tracks and the donkey lady, and I've been able to disprove it, and, you know, you find your ways. When you grow up with it, you get scared and what have you. I'm curious if you've ever gone to places like the Chinese graveyard. You know, I know a lot of my friends would go and say they heard, like, you know, people whispering in you know, Chinese or Asian or and what have you, or like maybe the juvenile detention on the outskirts of town that's abandoned. Those real, like, that are not really commercial, but as a kid coming from, you know, being from here, you hear about these places and how they're haunted, and you don't really want to go there because they're empty and there could be crazy people over there. But have you ever gone to one of those places and experienced anything?
Me?
Martin, you seem like you're the hunter.
Yeah.
As there'll be hunting grounds.
I've been to the Onion House, yeah. You know, with police officers, you know. Now, you have to, there's a big difference between actual ghost hunting and thrill seeking. Okay, these people are thrill-seeking. They want to go in the dark, like the mental institute on the south side. They break in, they get caught, they go to jail. You know, that's too much thrill, that's too much excitement for me. You know, but the cops that work there tell us we never see nothing. But people expect this because of Hollywood. Yeah. That's what they expect, that it's going to be dark and it's going to be abandoned and everything. You know, if a tree falls in the woods, does anybody hear it? No, okay? So, I mean, you know, you want to go to, we get better results going to populated places. The Alamo, okay? You got lots of people there. You got lots of visitors. You got lots of different people having sightings, okay? Not just one family you know, having a sighting. You know, so we get lots of activity. You know, probably the most photographed ghost we've ever got was Antonio at the Alamo. The second would probably be Jose Toribio, which is part of the Alamo grounds, actually, you know. So, you know, those are just thrill-seeking things, you know.
Yeah, I just wanted to see if you've ever metered those places. And
right, yeah. But you don't have to. It doesn't have to be dark, you know. I mean, hey, if I'm going to go ghost hunting, I'm going to hang out at the Menger. It's comfortable. It's nice. You can have a drink, you know. You know.
Hey. All right, so our last question, you know, sir.
Why suffer with mosquitoes?
Good evening, everyone. Mr. David, just wanted to ask, you yourself are a complete skeptic when it comes to this. Is that true?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're, I can tell by watching your face in the back, you're like, okay. My friend, another friend of mine, that she and I have been friends for a long time, we had this deal that if either one of us ever were to pass away, that we would come back and tell them what it's like on the other side without it being in a scary way. Would any of y'all have any thoughts on that, on your own lives, your own individual things? Would you want to be able to come back and experience the world?
We're all potential future ghosts.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, of course, I'm sure that delves into your own religious aspects of what you believe in, but I think it would be kind of a fascinating thing to contemplate.
He's talking to all of us.
Yeah, everybody. I'd like
Well, we have to go, like, why do ghosts stick around? You have to look maybe at the basic question. What is the big answer? What do y'all think?
Unfinished business.
Unfinished business, exactly. That's the number one. So like I said, it's just like studying fish, you know. So you look at observation stuff. So you have unfinished business, you know. So having a pack that says you're going to go back and talk to them, would that be enough unfinished business? We don't know.
Yep.
You know. I mean, and that's interesting, too, because, like, who's heard of the St. Anthony Hotel?
Sure.
Yep. Have you heard of the ghost on the second floor? Yeah, there's a Travis room, the meeting room. Didn't you used to work there? There's a Travis room right on the second floor. And there's the two public restrooms. And there's a ghost in the woman's restroom in the first stall. So you got to wonder, is she there because she has unfinished business?
Unfinished business?
Or because she had the experience of a lifetime.
It's like, I think that happened to Elvis as well.
Okay, I'll forget.
Haunted Graceland.
May I say one more thing?
Okay.
I would say, you know, I would hope to be an ancestor and meddling and poking around and, right. You know, if it's meant to be. But, you know, while I'm here, I do appreciate my ancestors and I do appreciate the relationship that I have with them and that they have with me. And you know, you get to feel kind of special about it, right? It's like,
right.
You know, within such a communal tradition, I am because we are, right? And, you know, I'm very aware of how many people sacrificed so I could be Dr. Brooks here today. And that they have put such an investment in me within the family and sacrificed so much, and that they still, even in death, are invested in making sure that I do the best for my family that I can and passing on our traditions and stories, you know, I think it's a very powerful thing.
All right. With that, we wrap up. And, oh, one more question. All right.
Sorry, I was cutting back there.
Okay.
Hi, guys. First, I want to thank you guys all. You guys are great, insightful. And I guess for the last question, in true Halloween spirit, what's the scariest experience any of you guys have ever had in any of your fields? And you and your studying, you being out in the field, and you in your hotel. That's it. Thanks.
All right, fantastic. Thank you. And Ernesto, you wanted to say
one thing, if you want to know, the Menger Hotel is doing something unusual. This Halloween, we're having a genuine psychic. The man is great. He's out of Austin, Gareth Pendragon. He's the one that the police department used the other day when that little boy that was autistic got lost, and they sent Gareth a photograph of him. And through the photograph, he was able to find where the little boy was, and he was rescued. Gareth will be at the Menger starting Halloween at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and he'll be doing readings, very reasonable readings. So if you want to check it out, go.
Now, so we asked at the beginning, now let's ask it now, how many people here believe in ghosts? Does it change? See, we got a few more hands now than we did before. So maybe... Thank you so much. Also want to thank the Women's Club of San Antonio, the Ranger Creek of Brewing and Distilling, and the Casa Rio in the Riverwalk, and thank all of y'all for supporting public radio in San Antonio. Thank you.